It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen, stream anywhere, anytime. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Happy Monday. How are you guys doing?
Happy Monday to you, my co-host, my company, as he is each and every Monday. He's the head coach and team director of Team Thad of the Nike EYBL circuit. Follow him on all socials at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, good day.
Great day, great sports week.
Let's tell everybody we got coming up on the program. We will overreact to what we saw over the weekend. We'll focus primarily on the Grizzlies and the NCAA tournament. Coming up next segment, Jason Munns is going to join the program like he does each and every Monday. The transfer portal is open, and boy, is it open indeed. We'll get Munns' thoughts on everything that is happening, some players that Memphis is targeting, how many to take seriously of the Tigers targeting. We'll get into all of that with Munns. During hour number two, we'll get into the list. We got some new bats. Heard your Yankees are the story of baseball, those cheating Yankees doing it again by playing with bats that literally everyone in the league could have played with, but nonetheless, the Yankees did it, so everyone got bent out of shape over. We got more Aaron Rodgers drama. We've had Jimmy Haslam speaking about the Deshaun Watson trade. Also, maybe the commish putting fans first. Let's get some games over in the United Arab Emirates, UAB. Let's go do that. We also have Grizzlies Celtics tonight. Pregame will start at 6:30 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Tip off with Eric at 7 p.m. The Grizzlies will also host the Warriors for heading on to Miami. But I think, Herd, I wanted to get your thoughts on it because I think you're the right person to have the perspective because you know NBA players. You yourself are a coach. But this was my overreaction as I've kind of thought about it more over the weekend. So, of course, we get the breaking news last Friday that the Grizzlies had fired Taylor Jenkins with 9 games remaining. I think it was one of those situations where almost everyone that's been watching the Grizzlies was not stunned that the Grizzlies fired Taylor Jenkins. I think it was that everyone was stunned that they fired him with 9 games remaining. I think that's where it goes. But the more that I've thought about it, I think this was my first overreaction from the weekend. Zach Kleiman in the front office should either have fired Taylor Jenkins last summer, or they should have let him pick his own staff. Because the way that I see it is, they make the decision, you're cleaning house of every assistant, but you're keeping Taylor. And to me, like, that kind of shows a little bit of wavering, waffling. Either you've made the decision that Taylor's your guy, and if you knew it was going to be a make-or-break season for Taylor in general, like, I think he should be allowed to pick guys that he's comfortable with. Because when you create the situation of, let's fire all the assistants and let's collaboratively pick the assistants for him, well, in a make-or-break season, he doesn't have guys in there he can trust. He doesn't have really guys in there that he's worked with. And I'm not saying, like, this should just be a revolving door of just having, you know, his buddies in there with him or whatnot. But, like, to me, it's you don't kind of do this middle ground that they threaded the needle with. Either you make the decision to move on, or you bring him back and you let him run his team. And if he can't do it this year, then you fire him. But to me, like, that was the mistake. It's the basically saying, like, we want to fire you, but we're not going to. I'm guessing basically why they made that opinion is, like, we're not really going to hold you accountable for last year because so many guys got hurt. But that seems to me to be the primary issue, because I think that the trying to get through a new year with new assistants that I don't even really think he picked, like, that was what caused all the friction. And so when it's going well, it's fine. But as soon as you go through a little of adversity, well, there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to start fighting for themselves.
No, you was mentioning that before the show, and that was such a good point as you was mentioning that. But I want to add a third option to it. I get you either let him go last summer, or you let him pick his own staff, or you do the responsible thing by letting him go after this year is over. What do you gain by letting him go? To me, if I'm a fan of the Grizzlies, and let's say some people know basketball, some people don't, it's almost a scapegoat, or you're not preparing us for the playoffs, or you're just giving up already. If you think anybody's going to step in and they're going to do better than the head coach that's been there, firing someone 2-3 weeks for the playoffs.
So, to answer your question, I think there's two possibilities.
Okay.
All right, I'll take the one positive, or maybe the less skeptical of it. They paid a lot of money to get Tomas Iasola. They paid the buyout from the Paris team that he was coaching, and then they also paid above market to get him to be their assistant because he had other options. Mm-hmm. So, you've brought him in, and you've made the decision, all right, what we're doing with this staff, it's not working, but we want to give him the opportunity to see, give him the 9 games, see if anything functionally looks different. Basically, let him have an extended audition. Mm-hmm. That would be the one scenario that I could think of. The other scenario that I think is probably getting downplayed, and I think it's going to get downplayed locally, but this is one of the things that crept into my mind. It was falling apart so quickly and so catastrophically for the Grizzlies. If you're Zach Kleiman, normally the way it works is, all right, team disappoints, but a GM that's had success gets to fire the coach, and then his number's up, but he'll be under the microscope next year. The scenario, though, that you make the decision to fire the coach with 9 games remaining is, what if it's collapsing so quickly and so catastrophically that Robert Pera makes the decision, we're just cleaning house and everybody's moving on? So you somewhat put the blame. Like, is it scapegoating Taylor? Like, kind of, but it's not in the sense of, I mean, I guess you could say it's like, it is scapegoating in the sense that you're trying to sacrifice someone to save your own neck, but I still think once you do that, all the attention's going to be on you and the roster, because I think what we're also going to see the remaining games is the Grizzlies have bigger issues than just who's the head coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so we this city has experienced bad timing of hiring and firing coaches would be an understatement in my opinion, right?
And I mean, we George and I racked our brains all Friday trying to figure out a true performance-based firing this late into the season, and we couldn't really come up with it. So it is unprecedented.
Yeah, it is unprecedented, like you said. And I mean, the man was number two most. I mean, anytime he has a healthy roster, he's pretty big time, like top four, probably 80% of the time he's been coaching, you know, in the last few years.
Every single season, with the exception of last year, they exceeded preseason expectations, including this one.
Yeah, and so I don't want to be that guy that's making up stories, but I think, I mean, people were saying stuff like he must have to get into one of the superstars because it just doesn't sound right that a playoff-winning team that still have a chance to even move up a little more is just firing the coach.
So do I think, like, Ja fired a kill shot? No, I don't. Do I think Ja said, wait, don't fire him? No, I do not. And so I think it was a lot like, I don't really think there was one, like, usually when you see something that happens that unexpectedly, a firing like that, your mind immediately goes to, there had to be an incident.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a lot of people from a lot of different angles. Everyone has basically given some variation, some more negatively influenced, some more positively influenced, but everybody keeps coming to the same conclusion of there wasn't one thing, but there was vibes were really bad, mm-hmm. and the idea was it's going so badly, we've already made the decision, we're not bringing him back, so let's just go ahead and do it now, and rather than ride this all out, which I would also argue kind of supports what I suspect to be true, which is there are people there in the front office that are worried about everybody getting canned. So at least if we do this, maybe we have a chance to save our own jobs.
Gotcha. Still unbelievable. Like I said, I wish I was in here with y'all on Friday because why is anybody getting canned for a playoff team? I mean, it's the West, so you're not guaranteed to win the championship. That never was the case. You were number two most of the year. You fall in the five. I think you might still get 3-4. Yes, the offense ain't look great. Yes, it has. You know, the last whatever 20 games hadn't been hot. But it still would be ridiculous to get rid of everybody for a team that made the playoffs.
What if, though, because they are on a path to where, what if they went from, George, can you look it up? Were they 2 before the All-Star break?
I believe so.
Let me fact check that.
What if they went from 2, let's say, because I'm pretty sure going into the All-Star break, they were either 2 or 3, and I think they might have even bounced up to 2 shortly after the All-Star. I want to say maybe after the Phoenix when they were still second. What if they fall from there to into the play-in, and let's say they don't get out of the play-in?
Then we can talk, but that hadn't happened.
No, I mean, that's why I keep reaching the same conclusion. It's somebody trying to save his job.
Yeah, but that's super overthinking that a person, that's somebody that's paranoid, right? That it really don't believe in Jenkins because
you've been around NBA front offices.
Well, yes.
It's a Game of Thrones.
That's more paranoid than somebody that's living a street life right there to think you finna go from 2-4 to play-in game to not making it. I don't see that. I mean, how far are they between 8 or 9?
So right now they're sitting in 5th. They're a game out of 6th, and I believe a game and a half out of 7, which would be the play-in. And they could even fall like to 8.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, at the All-Star break, the Grizzlies were the 2 seed by a half game. They were 36-18. Nuggets were 36-19.
So this thing is tight. So now, yep. now that you brought the numbers to me.
And I think the other big problem is it's not just wins and losses. Like, I do think part of this is eye test. Mm-hmm. It's not just wins and losses. It's when you watch them, they look like they're giving no effort.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think another big problem is there's still this juggling of the roster. I mean, we talked about it, George and I talked about it after the Utah game, where all of a sudden it goes from, you know, Zach Edey is kind of back in the rotation to before the Utah game, even a team that has a bunch of bigs, Edey winds up playing. But in the pregame, Taylor's talking about playing Jay Huff. And when Lamar Stevens gets back from his shoulder, like basically it was like just this constant shuffling, reshuffling, and just lack of consistency of who's even playing. And I think most people in the organization would sit there and go like, where's the urgency of getting ready for the playoffs?
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But when the playoffs come, you know you're going to really tighten the roster no matter who you are. So I think he would have had a 7-8. I'm going to tell you, whoever did that gamble is really high risk, high reward. Because if you think they thought they were saving their butt, what if they do to play the stuff you just said after the firing? Now everybody gone for real. Like, he should actually, if they go with the new coach and they move to 8 or 9, play in, he should do what everybody did on American Gangster. Once the other police saw people was getting arrested, he gone ahead, hounded himself, and jumped in the pool. He should just gone ahead, walk, gone take his name tag off, because at that point, you didn't open up. Everybody finna be against you if what happened you
okay,
just
okay, but what if you turn informant? So everybody's getting arrested, and all of a sudden you turn informant. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know what, Jeff? You know what? I'm so glad I got to meet you,
mm-hmm.
and I'm so glad where God brought me in life. But I'm originally from the, you know, I'm from the urban city of Memphis, so I can't even make examples about being a foreman. You know, it just don't sit right with my position in the city. But it's a great example you're making, though. But
listen, I've watched The Departed like 17 times. It's pretty obvious how Jack Nicholson got to stay in power. He basically just ratted to the FBI, and they killed, like, he got to kill who he wanted to kill, and so he stayed in business.
Yes, sir.
Shout out Whitey Bulger.
Yes, sir.
But, I mean, I guess if you want to take the positive, because I think you're making very good points, I think the opinion would be is it was so lost, and it was so, we can't come back from this. At least if we shake it up, it can't get worse. And if you show a little bit of promise, but like, I guess that was kind of the other thing. George, did Saturday feel any different to you than the last 2 months? I mean, they got it closer in the fourth quarter, but it still looked like, how was it any different realistically than the Thunder game where the Grizzlies took, I think they took a 4-point lead mm-hmm. in the fourth, and they end up getting beat by double figures. So I guess at least they didn't give up a 28-5 run and get beat by 20.
It's a worse team. The Lakers are
right, but it's not the
objectively
Thunder.
Worse than the Thunder. There were a couple things that that felt and looked a little different to me. But it's kind of getting into the granular. It's not as much like big picture type.
The two
stuff.
The two key differences that I saw. Number one, they put Zach Edey back in the lineup.
Yep,
and they went heavy with high pick and rolls,
mm-hmm.
which is something they've done a little bit more of. And then the number two big thing was, and I know it was the initial reaction was after Taylor got fired, this had to be Ja led. Again, I stand with the same position I had on Friday, having worked. Like, I don't think Ja fired a kill shot. Do I think Ja could have stepped in and maybe said, no, we're keeping him, and maybe that would have changed things? Perhaps. But I don't think that happened either. But I still don't think...
To that point, if we take Zach Kleiman's word kind of just at face value, he did say, I did not talk to any players about this. I didn't consult anybody.
I did not take that word at face value.
There, I was going to say, because if we don't take it at face value...
Do I know that for a fact that Zach went directly to players? No, I don't know that. But Hurd can back me up on this. There are ways to get information to players without having talking directly to players.
Yeah, for sure. So Zach said that it was a Ja thing?
No. Zach said this was a me thing.
Zach said, I did not consult any players on this. This was my decision.
Oh, this was
now,
a GM.
Now, that's exactly what you would also do as a GM.
To protect the players.
Correct, to make it seem like. And I'm not saying that was the 100% reason. I just believe this to be true. For a couple of weeks, it has been out there that this was something the front office was thinking about.
That doesn't surprise me.
Now, does that mean it goes through agents? Does that mean it goes through management? Does that mean you pulled other players aside, whatnot? And, like, do I think Zach called a team vote? No, duh. But I think there are ways to get your
to get
the idea across.
I'm not going to say, because I don't want to put it in his hands, it was a Ja thing. But I think some, because I mean, Ja is the biggest, but he's not the only superstar. It had to be some big disagreement still with a. I mean, think about this, guys. And Jeffrey, I love your take today because you are making this a positive thing. But dude, people was just crying, and it was 2 months before the season, and it was unique. With the penny letting the coaches go.
Yep.
Now we're talking about 2-3 weeks before the play. This is the NBA.
I can say one thing that would be different, though, with those two scenarios. I think Penny wanted to let the coaches go.
Yeah.
I do think, like, now, because this would be my argument.
Not all of them.
Yeah, that's probably. Yeah. Jermaine got to come back.
Well, we would just say that's a different scratch. Like, correct. If you're playing, that's a tie. Okay.
Yeah.
They was playing tug of war with his arms. He's a veteran, and somehow they both broke, and they just let him stay there. I'm talking about with the other people. I know one, it seemed like it had got messy, which is a good friend of mine. But either way, I don't think he would have did none of them when it happened. I think that was a 80 thing.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
I would also argue the key difference to me, though, because you're right. Like, I do think something happened, and all of a sudden Penny's getting rid of guys. I do think Penny got to bring in coaches he was comfortable with.
Yeah. Well, they was already there, most of them. The only person he had to bring in was my guy that played for Duke or whatever.
Nolan.
The only person he had to bring in was Nolan.
But, I mean, Nolan, they've been having eyes for Nolan for a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember Coach K shut it down like 5-6 years ago. I don't know if you remember
that. And Coach K offered his, like, son-in-law.
Remember the New York
guy that was supposed to bring in the – and then, who was the big player? He had, like, somebody in his
– No, you're talking about – You're talking about the last guy that was just there, Mike, came from...
He was like, coaching, like, an AAU team.
You're talking about my guy, Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the New York
Rangers. It's he's married to Coach K's daughter.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so he offered a son, no Nolan, but you could have a son-in-law.
Yeah, Nolan, they didn't want him off limits, but what happens when it circled back around, I guess what I think is, because Nolan is like, Coach K, Nolan is like a son to him.
Yeah.
So Coach K have a lot of sons, but... Nolan is like a top 5 guy. So when I think, now I haven't talked to Nolan about this, but I feel like when Coach K left and left it to Shire,
yep.
Not saying he thought he was going to get it, but him and Shire had always been on the same level. You know, he left and went to Louisville. He went
right. That's,
and Coach
that's
K
a,
wanted
that's
him
a,
to stay.
Because like on the bench level, they're basically the same.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the story going around right now is that Shire, I mean, I don't know how much I believe this, because I'd also like to know, did John know that, did someone tell him, maybe, just stick around? Because didn't get the UNLV job when he wanted it. And there was one other one. I can't remember if it was another Mountain West job, but there was another, didn't get either of them, winds up staying at Duke, and now he is the head coach. But, like, I guess, though, the other key difference is, despite the timing being bizarre in September, they still hadn't played a game. Like, and this is...
And that's why I'm saying this is more bizarre. That's what I'm saying. They hadn't even played a game to the point where, like, he had a couple months to steal. And not saying you, Jeff, but a lot of people thought the world was coming to the end. And that became almost the local, made that a national. And I think this is a bigger story.
I think 100%
you're
right. Matter
of fact, you do good with facts, and I do good with them from the dome, right? So I can't think of any NBA time that any coach got fired 2-3 weeks before that was in the playoffs. They didn't commit a major crime like killing, rape.
Right.
No, you know, just
performance based, like solely based on the job performance.
Yeah.
So, Adrian Griffin happened in January, I believe.
Yep, late January was.
But I also think that was silent assassin Giannis. Don Nelson stepped down with the Mavs. But that one, like, was a weird one. The only other examples that, like, we even came up with were the Nets found out that Larry Brown was taking the Kansas job, and so they said, no need to finish this season out. We'll pack your bags, go to Kansas now. And the same kind of thing happened when, who was the coach? Steve Fisher was the lead assistant for Michigan. The coach was taking another job. Shim Beckler, the AD at the time, gets word of it and goes, just go ahead and go now. Steve Fisher got to coach the NCAA tournament. Steve Fisher got the ring on that 89 team. But that's all, everything we're talking about, though, is like a scheme. That's somebody trying to either get a new job or whatnot. This was purely things are collapsing. We're trying to stop the collapse, and we're trying to salvage what we can of the season.
Do you feel like, and I'm going to tell you how I feel about this subject, do you feel like he had lost the locker room?
So, however you want to parse it, yeah,
because you
I
know
do.
People are saying.
Yeah, like so, because like that was the other thing that everyone pointed out. There are players that feel very strongly for Taylor Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
Dez and Jaren are two of the biggest. I think you can still like somebody and like your coach, and I think the message cannot be received. Because whether or not it was lack of staff continuity, whether or not it was everyone looking over their shoulder, I have no idea. Like you can give me about 15 explanations. I would buy just about any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But what was undeniable the last 6 weeks is this team would, every single game, it was the same script. They'd come out flat. They wouldn't guard anybody. They'd give up 70 points and a half. And then they would try to kind of fight their way back into it. And the one thing you can always say about Taylor's teams, even when they sucked, like last year, when he had hurt, he had maybe a G League team.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not even sure if you would have put, at times, the teams, the roster he was putting out there, I'm not sure they would have won the G League.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how bad it was. The thing you could never argue with, though, is the team always played hard. And you could see it. And that's what you would, that was, I think, what was just so frustrating watching this team for the last 6 to 8 weeks is you're just asking them to play hard. It wasn't even like, oh, they're losing. It's that they looked like they didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with the job part of this, what I think complicates it is it's always going to be viewed as the offense, the offense, the offense. And I think this was the, this isn't even revisionist history. And I know George wasn't producing the summer, but he was periodically in with us. I know he heard me say it in the summer. I will never believe the solution to your half court offense is some type of scheme. It's some type of coming up. Well, if we just run better stuff, if we run a better system, because everything that you see in the playoffs, I'm going to be 37 in August. I've been watching the NBA as long as I can remember watching TV. The NBA playoffs are defined by tough shot makers. That's who advances. And I just don't believe all of a sudden you have a team that has a shooting deficiency. All of a sudden they start running plays that are going to help them in the half court in the playoffs. I just don't believe in that. Like maybe I would have been proven wrong, but I've not seen anything that suggests that to me. And it's also kind of my issue. It's like looking forward with this team. I don't think the right answer of who the right coach should be. If the answer is we think it's he runs the best stuff, I don't care. Because I think we have reached the point with the Grizzlies where, do I think Phil Jackson ran the greatest offense and defensive schemes in the entire world? No, but I do know one thing. That guy knew how to manage a locker room. And he knew how to psychologically handle this. And now I do think the Grizzlies are at the point where it's less about offensively and defensively what are they running, and it's more about how can I get the most out of Ja Morant. How can I get the most out of Dez, and how can I get the most out of Jaren? And I don't really think that's hand me the grease board. Let me draw something up. But I mean, I'm willing to be wrong. But that's based on what I have watched in sports for my entire life. Like, I don't think that is a scheme issue.
No, and I see that, and I did hear that some people didn't like the offense or whatever. But
I think all that's true. I think some did and some didn't. So for instance, I bet Jaren does like it. You know why? It has allowed Jaren to play with more space, and Jaren, and to Jaren's credit, I don't want this just to be a, oh, this is just Jaren in an offense. Jaren's made himself a much better offensive basketball player, and he's had a great year. But if you're Ja and you realize I'm not getting high ball screens, and so every defense is just putting some 6'7" long athletic guy on me at the top, and I can't get going downhill, I can get how that would frustrate you.
No, and I'm with it. I did hear that he might didn't like it. It's just with the losing the locker room. I just, granted, I'm not just saying it because I'm a coach, and one of my biggest things is motivation and stuff, but I don't know. When I hear that, football, that's a bigger locker room, I'm just like, guys, you're getting paid $1 million. You should be playing hard regardless. And it ain't even just about the money. It's even about the love, and it's about your age. Like, it shouldn't take another. I mean, with kids, you got to use different voices, and I'm sure with adults maybe sometime, but you still should sign up to do your job.
Well, I think, though, that has been the actual biggest frustration amongst fans, because when this first started happening, there was some resistance from the team of, like, oh, they don't know what they're watching. Guys, this is a basketball crazy city. If it's on the TV, we watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't fool us by saying you're playing hard when we know you're not, because we know what it looks like when you're playing hard, because we can see in the middle of the games. And this is why I thought, and please do not take this as some type of white guy sticking up for Cam Spencer to play more, because I'm not. But what I am saying, and I'll use Lamar Stevens as an example so that it doesn't go that direction.
Yeah.
When Lamar and Cam came on the floor, Lamar didn't have a job. And guess what? Lamar looked like it. He was playing hungry, physical, and yeah, Lamar has his limitations, but it was the same thing. When Cam got on the floor, you're sitting there going, like, I don't know if this guy can play, but he's trying. And that was, I think, what was just frustrating to people. It is everybody's rooting for the same thing, which is this team to be good. And I don't even think this was as simple as, like, fans were insane thinking that this was a championship or bust year. No, but I do think, like, fans have a right to sit there and go, guys, play hard. Like, that's kind of the bare minimum of what we expect out of you. And I totally agree with you. And I think it's even exacerbated when you realize these guys get to do what every single one of us that played sports dreamed of our entire lives, which is somebody handing us a bunch of money to play the game. And yeah, we can't do it. But it's like the bare minimum we ask of you is just play hard. And like, I get it. You can't play hard 82 games a year. But that's not what we're talking about. It's like, how many times do we just have to watch miss shot, layup, miss shot, dunk? Guys just not getting back. Like, just like, that's what everybody was getting frustrated with.
No, I see that. And I'm with it. And that's why I say, although the people who didn't like him or his scheme or was following, I mean, you actually make yourself look bad doing that too. Like, you were saying, not playing hard. I tell my kids, like, when I get on you, now, them are not kids. Them are grown men with multi-million-dollar contracts. But I tell them, when you get mad at me or any coach, that's still your brand out there. You got to use that for motivation. You know what I mean?
And I would actually argue Taylor's not innocent. And I don't want this to come across as I think Taylor got picked on. Like, in the end, Taylor's going to get paid to not coach.
Yeah.
But someone I trust said the season was taking its toll on Taylor, and Taylor was a different coach. And so if you want to make the argument, what did he do to deserve this? I think when it started going sideways, he didn't have solutions. He's frustrated with the players he has available, whatnot. I think he stopped coaching him the same way that he had been. And I think that's where Taylor left himself vulnerable.
No, I see that. It's just, you know, you can't get off. The NBA is a player's game. If it was college or high school, I was going to say, you got players that go through slumps too, but if they're a superstar, we go ride or whatever. So I get it. It's unfortunate for Taylor. I mean, because I don't think he had last year, his winning percentage is great. I mean, it's a lot of things, but maybe the Grizzlies are on win now, right now. And so let's see how this works.
That's, like you said, it's risky, and that's the risk that they're taking. All right, let's turn our attention back to the Tigers. Jason Munns is going to join us next. We'll talk with him when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN.
This Saturday, Robert Irwin Jewelers is doing it again. It's a 6-hour, 60% off sale. This time, it's going to be at the Bartlett location. It's the real deal. It's a real 60% off sale. It's no marking up to markdown. And starting at 10 a.m. on a Saturday, you can get 60% off everything in the showcase. Robert Irwin Jewelers only has this sale one time every few years at each store. And that means this Saturday at Bartlett, you can have the opportunity to save 60% off designer jewelry, 60% off engagement rings, 60% off bracelets, earrings, necklaces, gemstones. Even name brand watches are 60% off. There's over 1,000 items to choose from. They also have special financing available. You can take up to six months to pay interest-free at Robert Irwin Jewelers. And again, it's in-store only at the Bartlett location at the corner of Bartlett Boulevard and Stage Road right next to Kroger. So it will end at 6 p.m. on Saturday. For complete details, beg your pardon, it's going to end at 4 p.m. on Saturday. For complete details, go to rijewelers.com, rijewelers.com. Jason Munns is a Tiger basketball beat writer for The Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter on X at Munsley. Joins us each and every Monday. Munns, what are we listening to?
Jeffrey, this is ZZ Top.
Oh, yeah.
I could only flag her down.
All right, so speaking of flagging people down,
sorry, it took me a second. I forgot what I sent to you. And I kind of couldn't.
No, yeah, it's fine. Speaking of flagging people down, how hard is it for you to flag down every target that the Tigers have right now?
There's a lot going on. There's a lot being said. There is a lot that is apparently going on. I think you have to develop at this time of year, if we've learned anything, there you kind of have to have a strong filter for what is, you know, I mean, and there are varying degrees of reality and fantasy or reality and non-reality. There's, you know, sort of reality, and there's hard reality, and then there's, you know, hard non-reality and then sort of non-reality. It really can be a mind-numbing endeavor to follow along with all this noise. But it's and then on top of it, you know, you've got some people who, you know, especially nowadays, like it's getting to the point where it's like more and more prevalent that you have to go through agents or you have to go through representatives or, you know, whatever you want to call them. Like, you have to go through them in order to get the information. And so that adds in a new element of a new degree of difficulty.
Yes.
But if you're just watching the names that are being connected to Memphis, you know, I think that we are – we're officially in the dozens right now. But again, you know, some of that's real, some of that's not.
Have you been able to identify, like, a pecking order, if you will, like guys that you think are higher priority? Because obviously all 12 of those guys, like, even if they were, you know, even if they wanted all 12, it's highly unlikely they're taking all 12. Have you been able to kind of establish who you think might, you know, be at the top of the lineup?
Well, it's way more than 12. I mean, like, in terms of, you know, you see these different accounts that put out, you know, Memphis is, or you know, so-and-so is hearing from this list of schools. I'm like, when you're counting that up, it's way more than 12. It's multiple dozens. So, you know, yes, there are some that are more real than others. And I think you have to start with the two that we know for a fact were on campus this weekend, because Quante Berry, who's a guard from Temple, 6'5" guard from Temple, who he was the first to make it publicly known that he was on campus. And then Syracuse, a guy from Syracuse, Chris Bell.
Yeah.
Who I think he shot 37% from three last year. He's basically just a spot-up shooter. I mean, I think he averages like 2 rebounds a game, something like that, this past season. Shot actually 42% the season before at Syracuse. So he's a pretty high-level shooter. 6'7" guy, so he's got a little bit of size to him as well. He also put out on social media that he tweeted out the photo of himself in the throwback Memphis State uniform. So I would say those two guys among the group that we know, you know, the group of names that we know of, those two guys I would say right now are the ones that you have to, you know, you have to look at and think that Memphis is in a good spot with, like in a better spot than most.
Okay, so the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because I thought this was a good nugget that you gave us last Monday, and I'm very appreciative of it.
Oh boy!
When we were discussing PJ Haggerty, and you had mentioned that you kind of like the vibes, and I'm not even really holding you to on the percentage, but one of the things that you'd mentioned that you thought was going to be important for retaining PJ Haggerty was having a Tyrese Hunter replacement, because PJ felt that Tyrese really made him shine at a level that maybe even surprised him a little bit.
Yeah.
How, I would presume Penny is even going to take note of that. Who are some of the guys that you've seen, at least their name pop up, where you're like, okay, I can see where that's a Tyrese Hunter replacement?
Yeah. I mean, really, it's interesting that you asked that now, because if you'd asked it 2 hours ago, I don't know that I would have had the same answer. But I mean, to me, the one that just went into the portal within the last hour that fits that description to me to a T is Jacoby Gillespie, Maryland's point guard, who just went in the transfer portal like within the last hour. He began his career at Belmont in Nashville. So, you know, not that means a ton. It's just, it's a fact about him, and it's, you know, Tennessee ties to a certain extent. But yeah, like, he shot 40% from three this past season, helped his team get to the Sweet 16, averaged, I think, almost 15 points a game, almost 5 assists per game. Like, he's a high level point guard who's got experience. And yeah, you know, like, I've been, you know, as this off season, as young as it is, has started to unfold, he's a guy that I was thinking to myself all along, especially as the Kevin Willard stuff got weirder and weirder. You know, like, if Kevin Willard does in fact leave, I could see Jacoby Gillespie getting into the transfer portal, and maybe he follows Kevin Willard, but maybe he doesn't. We'll see. I mean, it's not like Kevin Willard recruited him. You know, it's not like they go way, way, way back. You know, again, he went to Belmont first out of high school. I can't imagine that he and Kevin Willard have that strong of a relationship. Now, you know, they had success together. They incredibly recent lately they've had success together. But again, you know, if I was kind of surveying the field and thinking, okay, this may be a situation where a high-level experienced point guard somewhat akin to Tyrese Hunter's profile might be looking at a different opportunity, that would Jakobi Gillespie would be one that I would keep an eye on. And then as it happens, like I said, pretty recently he goes into the transfer portal. So, you know, I don't know that Memphis is going to get involved there, but I think they will.
Amarian Dickerson, who was at Robert Morris this year, was another name that I had seen going around on social. I believe Hitman Hoops had even put it out. How serious do you think that is for Memphis?
It's kind of dependent upon, at least the way I see it, it's kind of dependent upon what happens with some other guys that are similar in profile to him. I mean, he's probably the first player that Memphis has been connected to publicly that is a true rim protector. He averaged 2.5 blocks per game this past season at Robert Morris. Now that's Robert Morris. It's, you know, nothing against Robert Morris, nothing against that level of competition, but that, you know, 2.5 blocks per game is, you would think that moving up to Memphis, that's going to be tough too, I would think, you know, do that again. But he's the first like real rim protector that I've seen Memphis publicly mentioned with, connected to. But you know, they are also involved with, or reportedly, they're also reportedly involved with a couple of other guys from low major schools, Amari Monroe from Quinnipiac and Jamichael Stillwell from Milwaukee. Both of them averaged double doubles this season. One of them, Amari Monroe, was the MAAC Player of the Year, and Jamichael Stillwell was, I think, first team All Horizon League. You know, those guys, again, they both averaged right at double figures in rebounding or actually double figures in rebounding. And so, you know, I think they were involved with them earlier than the guy from Robert Morris. And so, you know, we'll see where things play out with Stillwell and Monroe. But, yeah, I mean, Richardson is certainly somebody you want to keep an eye on.
I was trying to see. We had another Maryland guy just go into the portal, which not shocking.
Rodney Rice.
Yes, Rodney Rice just went into the portal. I mean, the problem is I also don't know. Like, some of these guys can go in the portal with the do not contact. But I'll be curious to know how many Maryland guys are actually following Kevin Willard to Villanova, because I did not get the sense that, like, it was a lot like with Will Wade leaving McNeese where – some of those guys knew they were going with him. They find out on a Zoom that he's finally leaving. So I'd be curious to know, you know, how many of those guys are actually following him, because it wouldn't surprise me if it's not that many.
Yeah, because like I said before, things got pretty weird these last couple of weeks for Maryland and Kevin Willard. And if there was ever a situation where everybody might be looking for a clean break, this may be that situation.
Yeah, and then I guess let's talk a little bit about guys that could return or guys that we know are not returning. So at this point, who do you believe that was with the program this year that we will not see back next year?
I think PJ Carter's definitely – I mean, are we talking about guys who are in the transfer portal?
Yeah, let's set aside whether or not – because I know Dane – thinks that maybe he could fight for some eligibility. I know that you've reported on it extensively, and something would have to change in the bylaws for Dane to be back, right? That's your understanding?
Yes. I mean, you know, I you never say never with the NCAA,
correct,
but they would have to rewrite a rule.
A rule.
They'd either ignore it or whether it gets rewritten or not, it would essentially be rewriting their rule just to get him an extra year of eligibility. But again, you know, I'm sure stranger things have happened.
Okay, so guys that could be back this year that you think are in the portal and they're probably unlikely to return. Who do you think right now would fit that bill?
I don't think any of the three guys who are in the portal right now that played at Memphis this past season will be back, and that's Baraka, Koje, that's Jared Harris, and PJ Carter. I think they're all definitely gone. You know, just because you go into the portal does not mean you can't withdraw your name and stay at your school. It's happened before at Memphis with Malcolm Dandridge, but I don't see that happening this time around with those three guys. Now, the other guys who are eligible, who still have eligibility left, who were on this past season's roster, who, as we sit here right now, are not in the portal. That's PJ Haggerty, that is Dante Harris, Damarian Yates, and Bunakibe. And I mean, I think you flip a coin really on Yates and Kibe. I feel pretty strongly that Dante Harris is going to be back. And I still feel like PJ Haggerty will be back. But yeah, I think, you know, it's anybody's guess on Damarian Yates and Bunakibe. I think part of that's going to depend on how Memphis makes its, you know, how they navigate the transfer portal, you know, how they, you know, what kind of stuff, what kind of return they're going to be able to get from the transfer portal.
What about the guys that are committed? Because it almost feels like in this era, like we're struggling enough to keep up with portal recruiting, let alone high school recruiting or junior college, like normal areas of recruiting. I know we've got Felipe Patino and Daniel Vieira Tuck.
Mm-hmm.
Is there still the expectation in your mind that they are Tigers next year?
I asked both of them last week. Now, I know this, I mean, you know, just like everybody knows how fluid this stuff is.
Oh, boy.
But I asked them last week that they are, like, what their status was, and they're both still committed, both still firmly, like, 100% planning to be here next season. And until we hear otherwise, I think you have to assume that that's the case. Now, you know, I kind of look at it the same way I look at Damarian Yates and Bunakibe. Like, you know, I think it depends on what happens the next 3 to 6 weeks or whatever, however long it takes for Penny to work his way through the transfer portal process. You know, if he gets on a roll and starts picking up, you know, starts really getting hot, then maybe you do see some guys who are sort of encouraged to alter their own course. But if it doesn't quite work out that way, then I think those guys, like, at least on their end, they're still planning to be at Memphis next season. And so, yeah, like I said, I think until that changes, you have to assume that they're good, that they're solid.
Okay, one of the names that I know was reported, and I think it was after we spoke with you on Monday, but it's a familiar name. How seriously do you think the pursuit of Mikey Williams is going to be?
I do not think it's very serious at all. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like there probably that there wasn't some sort of communication between Penny and Mikey. I think that they still, like, Penny made it very clear, even when Mikey got in the transfer portal and signed with UCF, that he was still going to stay close, you know, keep in touch with Mikey. And I'm also not, I want to make it clear, I'm not saying that Mikey won't be here, or there's not a chance that Mikey will be here again. But I don't get the sense, based on the conversations that I've had, that whatever interest, quote unquote interest, Memphis may have expressed with Mikey, I'm not convinced that it wasn't anything more than just Penny reaching out and saying, "Hey, are you good?"
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Like, if you ever need anything, if you ever need any help, let me know. You know, that sort of thing. I think, That's the impression that I get. I don't know that they're, as we sit here today, fluid, remember, fluid, March 31st, as we sit here right now, I get the feeling that whatever contact there may have been, it was probably just like along the same lines as every other time they've exchanged texts.
I know last year one of the focal points for Penny was making sure to get the roster in early and have him here for summer workouts. Do you get the sense that that is something that is going to be prioritized again? Or like, I just can see where this becomes, because of the amount of coaching turnover we've seen, it feels like at a fairly high level. Like I can see where everyone can say, hey, we'd like to get everyone in as soon as possible. But do you get the sense that that's the same priority that it was last year?
Yeah, I don't have any reason to believe that. I mean, I think Penny really liked the results that produced. I mean, anytime he spoke all the way up until November, even past November, even after the season started, like anytime he spoke, pretty much he was touting the fact that that he had the majority of his team in place on campus as early as you can possibly have your team in place and on campus. Now, there were a couple of exceptions. PJ Carter didn't come until later because he'd originally signed with Rice and, it didn't quite happen and Memphis felt like they needed somebody else and they went and got him and he was a little bit later than everybody. But, and then Buna Kibe was, even though he redshirted this past season, like he was another late add. I think he didn't get added until October. But you're talking about a redshirt there. So the majority of the team was in place in June, and I think Penny really, 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 saw what that meant for the continuity and the chemistry and the cohesion that showed up. I mean, like, you can't argue with the results. Like, everybody was on the same page. Everybody was playing well together very early in the season. And so I would be very surprised if Penny does not maintain that same strategy going forward.
Anything else to close on your radar that you think we should be paying attention to?
I don't know. I mean, it does seem like it is all transfer portal all the time. It doesn't feel like there's any thing else that anybody's paying attention to right now as far as Memphis basketball is concerned besides that. And I mean, of course, the PJ Haggerty decision, you're paying attention to that, but I think, yeah, right now it's just all about the roster and the transfer portal.
Munns, we really appreciate it, my man. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
That is Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer over at the Commercial Appeal. He's got some content over there, including some frequently asked questions. They can go and read that information about PJ Haggerty as well as some of the other portal targets. So go check that out as well. When we come back, let's get into the list. We haven't even really had a chance to talk about the Sweet 16 as well as the Elite Eight. We'll talk about that. The Final Four is set. Got some NFL news. We'll get into all that during hour number two. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM.